Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in this Monday evening. Hi. Glad you could be. Okay, look, we had an editorial meeting before the program tonight, both of us. And we decided this is our last night. Until the day he commits suicide on his program, this is the last night that we talk about this crazy man, this Glenn Beck. Okay, what's that I hear? The cheers of hundreds saying, yay! I would have said thousands, but I don't like to exaggerate. What did Bachman say? A million people showed up at his Beckorama. Give him $100,000, but, and what difference does it make? I'm still waiting for the miracle. He promised a miracle. What did we get? A flock of geese flew over in a V, like geese always do. That was the sign from God. Listen, I learned a long time ago, when somebody starts channeling God, you know, when you pray, you're praying. When you get an answer back, you're schizophrenic. And, what? Why are you looking at me like that? You're looking at me like from under your eyebrow ridge. That was a little scary, Kathy. I mean, that's a scary look. We're going to get to one of the things that Beck is going to have to do now is give up all his money. He's going to have to let all of his money go. All these Christian freaks. That's where you can tell the false prophets from the real prophets. The false prophets, you know, keep their money, like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and all these crazy bastards, you know. But we're going to talk about that a little bit. Also, I think what's going on here is that, you know, there's no question that Beck is a very popular figure in the entertainment world, in media. And he is also somebody who is involved in addiction 12-step programs, which are highly destructive. Anyone who suggests a 12-step program to you, if you're having trouble with addiction, don't do it. Go find something else. There are alternative plans. The first thing you do in a 12-step is to give up your individual, give up your sovereignty. You're no longer your own person. Now, don't send me email. Oh, Jesus, God, I didn't. If you're in AA, if you go to these meetings, don't send me an email now telling me how it's the only thing that kept you sober, because I'll either delete your email or write back to you and tell you hog snot. Anyway, I digress. So Beck, being the religious fanatic that he is, I thought he was a political figure. He's just another two-bit tin horn preacher who, at the apex of his notoriety, which is where he is now, he can attract 100,000 people to the mall in Washington and give a sermon. Well, good for him. I can imagine, though, that at this point, Pat Robertson and Franklin Graham are just chewing their own legs off, because they could have done something like that and made millions. Beck is only going to wind up with hundreds of thousands. But anyway. So, American media and anyone who talks about him, including moi, I admit it, is being dragged along on his 12-step program. It ends tonight. It ends tonight. This is the last time I'm going to bring this psychopathic, crazy little rat up, okay? I mean, I've had it like up to here. I've had enough of this punk. He's had his 15 minutes. For the people who got all involved in what a threat he was, like me, it's time to just let this freak go. I read something. Somebody sent me something tonight, a piece from Common Dreams, I think, about that Beck is has coalesced now into this charismatic leader. Oh, horse crap. Just like Jim Jones was a charismatic leader, right? He was. Jim Jones was very charismatic. Look what happened to him and his followers. Ah, so this is it. This is it, truth seekers. Call your friends. Tell them, well, Malloy says he's just going to do this tonight, and that's it. And by the way, we're going to cover this the first hour, maybe a little bit the second hour. Then we're going to move on. Later on tonight, we'll take a look at BP's insistence that it has a right, maybe from God. Everybody's claiming God. BP has the right to pollute, destroy, and lie as they choose. We're going to get into that tonight, too. So, you know, all this, all this calling on a divine being. Everybody's calling on a divine being. Ah, whoo, hee. Crazy, crazy, crazy. We have time to, no, we don't have time to run this right now. But what we're going to do, when we come back, which should be in a couple of minutes, we're going to break. A couple of weeks before this weekend, Beck the Great described the miracles he expected at his twin historic events. And we'll cover that. But from the book, I read from the book. Matthew 2, 4. Man cannot live on bread alone. It has to do with money. Matthew 4, 23. He went round the whole of Galilee, teaching in the synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Matthew 6, 19. Do not store up for yourselves treasure on earth. Matthew 6, 24 and Luke 16, 13. You cannot serve God and money. Matthew 6, verse 33. Set your mind on God's kingdom and his justice before everything else. Matthew 16, 24 and 25. If anyone wishes to be a follower of mine, he must leave self behind. He must take up his cross and come with me. Whoever cares for his own safety is lost. Woo! Matthew 19 and Mark 10. I tell you this, a rich man will find it hard to enter the kingdom of heaven. I repeat, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Uh-oh. Matthew 25. The parable of the sheep and goats explicitly states that only those who saw Jesus in the hungry, the thirsty, the homeless, the naked, and in prison and offered help will enter the kingdom of heaven. Luke 6, 24. But alas for you who are sick, you have had your time of happiness. Alas for you who are well fed, you shall go hungry. Ooh. Luke 12, 32. Have no fear, little flock, for your Father has chosen to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give in charity. Provide for yourselves purses that do not wear out and never-failing treasure in heaven, where no thief can near it, no moth destroy it. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And Luke 14, verse 33. So also none of you can be a disciple of mine without parting with all your possessions. Well, my goodness. That means Glenn Beck's $32 million a year salary and paybacks and kickbacks and stuff. He's obviously going to give it up because he is a man of God who talks to geese. He's a man of God who God talks to him and tells him what to do while the geese fly over in a goose formation. Oh, look, geese. Oh, a sign from Yahweh, Allah, Jehovah, somebody. Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, Beck is going to do exactly what Jesus said, because Beck is a true believer. Beck is going to start next Monday giving away millions and millions and millions of dollars. And once he thus purifies himself, he will be able to do what he exhorted the faithful to do last Saturday. Oh, thank you, Jesus. Music, please. We'll be right back.
talk radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malone.
Yes, it is. It is 21 past the hour. Again, this is the last night we're going to talk about this freak Glenn Beck. Let's just purify our systems and be done with it. He's just another religious huckster. A couple of weeks before the magic of this past weekend, Beck described the miracles he expected at his event, events that forces in the government were trying to stop, right? Oh, let's kill the music, and there we go. Yeah, the government was trying to stop the miracles. Tell me these are not the ramblings of a madman, or at least an over-the-top TV evangelist. Beck, quote, wrote a check, end quote, for the Kennedy Center to hold an August 27th Divine Destiny speech preview before Saturday's event. Historic, miraculous events. Tell your children you were there. You were a witness to the miracle. Oh, yeah, interspersed with the evangelical rhetoric about miracles is helpful hints about registering your tour bus and how to find the porta potties. This is really nuts. You want to hear mental illness on a massive scale? Listen.
I've said for some time now, expect miracles. Put yourself in a place where you can start to demand miracles.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, okay.
Expect to see miracles.
Okay.
Great and powerful miracles are coming.
Geese.
I've been working on about a year now, 828, this Restoring Honor project, because how are you going to fix this? We have to have honor. We must have honor and integrity, and we must teach our children certain principles.
Geese.
But it goes beyond honor. It also goes into faith. This is about faith, hope, and charity, and honor.
Geese.
On 828. But unbeknownst to everyone, I have been working on something else alongside of it.
Tell us.
I haven't said anything about it because I, quite
Tell
honestly, I know how the media is.
Yeah.
And this one
yeah.
is also historic.
Tell us.
It's going to happen on 827,
yeah.
the night before in Washington, D.C.
Like
it is going to be incredible and historic.
Did
I'll just
happen?
Tell you this.
Did it happen?
For about the last year, I have been talking to some of the biggest religious leaders, Jewish rabbis, pastors, priests, you name it.
Imams.
And you're about to see things that you've never seen before.
Rabbits
and just
out
a
of
little
hats.
Appetizer is happening at the Kennedy Center the night before. I wrote the check for the Kennedy Center, but I'm not going to charge any money for any tickets. I built it, and now you'll need to come. Tickets are going to be extraordinarily difficult to get because there's some other people that are in the audience that will make up the majority of the audience. But I've said too much.
Oh, no.
I've heard that hotel rooms and hotel space in D.C. are going so fast, most are sold out.
Oh.
Please make arrangements to join us now.
Yeah.
828, it's 2 weeks away. A friend of mine called me and said a Pittsburgh paper, the Tribune Review,
yeah.
great paper in
yeah.
Pittsburgh, did
That's
a contest,
right.
signed people up on buses that they were going to send to 828. In one day, in the first hour, 1,500 people signed up.
Gosh darn!
In one day.
One day!
20,000 signed up.
20,000!
This is
Woo!
A historic event.
Woo!
There are forces in the government now that are trying to stop any
yes.
new gatherings
the
after
forces.
This one on the Lincoln Memorial.
The
it's
forces.
Just too sacred of a space.
Yes.
Oh, it's a sacred space, all right.
It is.
And what is going to happen on 828? Will be a miracle.
It will.
This is something that you do not want to miss.
Geese.
Bring your children. Leave your signs at home. Bring your children.
Geese!
Come as you are, but leave far more powerful. By the way, it's important also, if you have a bus that
yeah.
you're going on, make sure somebody has registered that
right,
bus.
Get the bus.
Go to glenbeck.com/828.
The porta potties.
The Parks Service has rules, and...
Yeah.
They go by the bus numbers,
yeah.
and they don't allow more porta-potties to be brought on the mall. It's all accordance to the bus, and so if you don't register the bus
uh-oh. You don't get, uh-oh.
People may not have enough porta-potties.
Oh,
Make
no!
sure you go to glenbeck.com/828
and
there's be
a
there
porta-potty
because something
there.
Remarkable
yes.
is about to happen.
Oh, I'm telling you, something is going to, if the government doesn't stop it, We are going to, you've heard of the loaves and fishes. We are going to have the bus spaces in the porta potties. I will start with 6 porta potties and I will wave my hands and all of a sudden there will be 16 and then 66 and then 106 and then 1,006 and then 10,006. There will be porta potties from hell to breakfast. There will be porta potties over the hill beyond the dale coming up. I'm sorry. I lost my mind there for a moment. Well, if you were in direct communication with God the way I am, you would tend to occasionally lose your geese, oops, your mind, too. But I'm only God's servant. Expect a miracle and get a cheeseburger.
Isn't it rich? Isn't it queer? Losing my timing this late in my career.
Right-wing rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right. You know, one has to assume that Mr. Beck is suffering psychological delusions of grandeur of biblical proportions. This guy is right up there with Jim Jones. You tell me. At his website, Beck placed restoring honor in the context, you know, his little Beck-a-palooza on Saturday. He placed it in the context of the moon landing, the Montgomery bus boycott, Iwo Jima, the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and other landmark historical events. His website also suggested that Beck is following in the tradition of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, most of the following fathers, Martha Washington, the Wright brothers, and anyone else you want to toss in there. The video also was shown at Restoring Honor, where the geese flew over. All right, here we go. From the beginning, from the opening of his sermon on Saturday. Yee-hoo! On America. Turning back. Where have we heard this before? To God!
Something beyond imagination is happening.
Yes!
Something that is beyond man is happening.
Yes!
America today begins to turn back to God.
God!
For too long,
how long,
this country has wandered in darkness, and we have wandered in darkness in periods from the beginning.
Oh, really?
We have had moments of brilliance and moments of darkness.
Oh!
But this country has spent far too long worried about scars. And thinking about the scars and concentrating on the scars.
Stars?
Today we are going to concentrate on the good things in America.
Scars. Oh, he said scars? I thought he said stars. I thought he was busting up on astrologers or something. Son of a bitch, this is good. All right. Beck says he's looking for the next George Washington. Who's in the crowd right now?
Look what that stick and that man did.
What?
Have trust in the Lord and recognize that Moses and Abraham Lincoln and George Washington, they were men. They were just like you.
I thought they were apple trees.
They just picked up their stick.
Their stick.
I think I can relate to Martin Luther King out of all of these giants.
Yeah.
I can relate to Martin Luther King probably the most because we haven't carved him in marble yet. He's still a man. And that's the message.
We haven't he said this was all spontaneous, that the spirit would speak through him. You know, I believe him, but I think the spirit is old granddad or maybe Jack Black. I don't know, but son of a bitch, man. What did he say there? Pick up your stick. A stick. Okay, now, are we on number two or number three now? You have no idea, do you? It's just craziness. Beck explains the importance of his new reformed... Oh, so we've got an extra one. Okay, now he's looking for George Washington, who's in the crowd right now.
Somewhere in this crowd. I know it. I have been looking for the next George Washington. I can't find him. I know he is in this crowd. He may be 8 years old, but this is the moment. This is the moment that he dedicates his life, that he sees giants around him.
Kill the British!
And 25 years from now,
freedom!
He will come not to this stair, but to those stairs. And he can proclaim, I have a new dream. That must be our goal.
What? What? George Washington will have a new dream. That must be our goal. Because he's not made out of marble. Or, hello? I hear things. There go the geese. There goes a flock of them. Oh, my God. Look. Look. Oh. We're surrounded by miracles today. Geese. There's a George Washington out there who's going to fight the British. And he's 8 years old? I don't know. Now we get to the good part. The Black Robe Regiment. Ooh. His army of holy warrior preachers who will forcibly restore God in America. You apostate son of a bitch! You will believe! Ooh. There are 240 men and women of all faiths, except Muslims, standing with Beck at the rally, ready to start the heart of the nation again, as in Dick Cheney, and return the heart to God.
For 240 years, they have been absent from the American landscape. The Black Robe Regiment is back again today.
Woo!
America, it is time to start the heart of this nation again.
Yeah!
And put it where it belongs, our heart with God. Go to your churches.
Amen.
Your synagogues.
Amen.
Your mosque. Anyone that
mosque.
Is not preaching hate and division. Anyone that is not teaching to kill another man. These 240 men and women from all faith represent thousands of clergy that we couldn't fit into this area that are amongst you now.
Ooh.
Thousands that have come here to the mall to stand with America and God.
And the 8-year-old George Washington and the geese. Ooh. I was going to say the geese again, but I think I've worked that one. Oh, Black Robe Regiment? Well, the Black Robe Regiment has been around for a long time, Glenn. It's just been molesting young children inside these sanctum sanctorums that you're talking about. All the priests, all the Black Robe Regiment, they have been buggering little boys and girls, Glenn. Is that what we return to? No, Mike Malloy, you filthy demon! This guy is nuts. Nuts. He's like a squirrel running across Central Park, and he stops every once in a while to check his nuts. That's Glenn Beck. Martin writes, Beck on his program about 5 months ago said, quote, I'm begging you, your right to religion and freedom, to exercise religion and read all the passages of the Bible as you want to read them and as your church wants to preach them, are going to come under the ropes in the next year. If it lasts that long, it will be the next year. I beg you, look for the word social justice or economic justice on your church website. If you find it, run as fast as you can. And be careful you run right over Jesus, because he's running too. Social justice and economic justice, they're code words. Now, am I advising people to leave their church? Yes! But wait a minute, Glenn, you just told people to go. I'm telling you, this crazy son of a bitch is having a major, massive nervous breakdown. Keep following him, Republicans! Do it! He's your leader! I'm advising people to leave their church. Yes! Run! Run! Michael writes in, one of the people appearing with Beck was one of Casino Jack Abramoff's close personal friends, Rabbi Lapin. Lapin is the French word for rabbit. So Beck pulled Rabbi Rabbit out of his ass. Rabbi Rabbit! You gotta love it. Oh my God. This is from Steve in California, writes, Mike, so babbling Beck and the tundra twit. Sarah Palin, got to be careful with that one. The tundra twit. Twit with an I. Sarah Palin plus the Tea Party pinheads want to restore honor in America? Where the hell were these people when the Bush-Cheney crime family were pillaging the country? When they speak of honor and values, what honor? What values are they talking about? Stealing elections? Lying us into a war in Iraq? War crimes? Profiteering? Cronyism? Pilfering the treasury? Bankrupting the country? Meanwhile, they want to deprive people of health care, unemployment benefits, social programs in general, while giving tax breaks to the wealthiest Americans. That's their idea of honor? And values? Their protests and rhetoric are as empty and hollow as their heads. The people you see at these rallies are just ignorant and useful idiots. Of course, those who are financing the Tea Party movement know exactly what they're doing. They don't want to restore America. They want to drive it over the cliff and then take what's left for themselves. You know, Steve, I think you're right. I really do. Oh, my God. The geese are coming. I hear their wings. I hear their wings flapping. Listen. It doesn't sound like geese. It sounds like Rush. Not Limbaugh. Sounds like the band Rush. But the geese.
Spread your ear pollution, both far and wide. Keep your contributions.
Day Screening with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. It's a rainy afternoon here in South Central Kentucky, so to pass the time, I surf the web and find the following on Beck's Special Warrior Operations Fund site regarding the miracle of the geese. Quote,
this rally
is compliant with IRS rules and regulations found in IRS Publication 557 and IRS Publication 4221-PC. For tax purposes, a gift to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation is deductible in accordance with Internal Revenue Service's tax laws. No goods or services were provided in exchange for your contribution. The purchase of Restoring Honor Rally merchandise is not a donation to the Special Operations Warrior Fund, but all net proceeds from the sale of Restoring Honor Rally merchandise is being donated to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. All contributions made to the Special Operations Warrior Foundation will first be applied to the costs of the Restoring Honor Rally taking place on August 28, 2010. All contributions in excess of these costs will then be retained by the Special Operations Warrior Foundation. Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Sarah Palin made $20 million this year. Beck has made $32 million. That's $52 million between the two of them. And they're going to rip off the soldiers just like Hannity. And don't you know Hannity is just eating his own feet? On Saturday, Hannity sat right there listening to this, and he just went, "Oh, damn it, damn it, damn it, why didn't I think of this? All I have are these little Freedom Sucks concerts," or whatever they were called. "That's all I could come up with. I used to be the head cheese. I used to be the head cheese on Fox, and then this bat comes over here from Headline News, that son of a bitch. I was going to succeed Rush when he keels over from a fat heart attack. And now it's going to be Beck. Oh, damn it. I've stood in line for 12 years. And now Beck, this little bastard Beck, and his geese, and his big rally. I don't know what to do. I know what I'll do. I'll go cruise the neighborhood and have my bodyguards beat up some Mexicans. That's what I'll do." Can you imagine Hannity is just freaking out? Huh? Bob in Kentucky says, "Notice the next to last line. Yeah, I can only assume that any money that people sent thinking that it would help veterans and their families actually paid for limos, private planes, hotel accommodations, and appearance fees for Palin and the rest of the crew. Beck reminds me of the episode of The Twilight Zone called He's Alive." Here is the opening monologue written by Rod Serling with Beck's name inserted. "Portrait of a Bush League Fuhrer named Glenn Beck, a sparse little man who feeds off his self-delusions and finds himself perpetually hungry for want of greatness in his diet. And like some goose-stepping predecessors, he searches for something to explain his hunger and to rationalize why a world passes him by without saluting. That's something he looks for and finds is in a sewer. In his own twisted and distorted lexicon, he calls it faith, strength, truth. But in just a moment, Glenn Beck will ply his trade on another kind of corner, a strange intersection in a shadow land called the Twilight Zone." Hey, pretty good, Bob. Do-do-do-do-do. Uncle Cracker and the Peckerheads, or Beckerheads. Linda in Phoenix. "Hi, Mike. No, I'm not referring to a new punk rock band. I mean Glenn Beck and the Beckerheads. I don't know how much more I can stand. It's just never-ending. I can't say that word. I only regret not offering to cater their event with those fabulous Chicken McCrack Nuggets." That old Van Halen song, Jump, keeps. Do we have that? Could you get Jump real quick? I like that song. Can we go out with Jump? Oh, we can't? We have to. Okay. The old Van Halen song, Jump, keeps coming to mind. If things don't change fast and soon, yeah, we might as well jump. I'm about 3 steps away from jumping off that cliff. How much longer can the rest of us continue living in this asylum? Glenn Beck is like that crazy aunt that was kept in the cellar that nobody wanted to talk about. We kept ours in the attic. I think from now on we should refer to him collectively as our crazy Uncle Cracker. Beckerheads, Crackerheads. Linda, about to lose it in Phoenix. You people cracking me up tonight. I swear to God you are. Goosey, goosey gander, where do you wander? Upstairs, downstairs, and in my lady's chamber. You know, ever since I was a kid, I worried about rhyming that verse correctly. Is it Goosey Game Bar? Ladies Chander? My parents, of course, had joined the adult conspiracy and wouldn't tell me. But being the daughter of a farm gal, I do know what the phrase loose as a goose means. Pity that none of Beck's geese were loose. Captain Mary, expecting miracles in Memphis. Like maybe my tomatoes will revive. Captain Mary in Memphis. Yeah, remember that? Loosey Goosey Gander. Goosey Goosey Gander, where do you wander? Upstairs, downstairs, in my lady's chamber. And it never rhymed. It never rhymed. Even if you did it with a British Goosey Goosey Ganda. It's Goosey Goosey Gander, where do you wander? Upstairs, downstairs, and in my lady's chamber. All right. Rose in Northern California heard that God was a no-show with the miracle at the Beckorama. Everyone knows that God rides the yellow line. And that was a big no-no in D.C. for the Beck rally, folks. You know, the Son of God being a dark-skinned dude from Palestine and living with his peeps in the hood? Rose from Northern California. We'll be back after the break. We're going to continue a little bit more with Beck. This is the last time I'm going to try. I swear, this is the last time we're going to bring this psychotic geek up.
If you are...
British Petroleum and that company's insistence that it has a right, maybe it's a God-given right, to pollute, destroy, and lie as they choose. All right, a couple emails here about the Beckapalooza. Darren in North Carolina writes, it's about time that God-fearing Protestant white people took back the civil rights movement. Have we forgotten all about all the WASPs and rednecks who marched with Dr. King? Okay, they marched around Dr. King. They even shouted encouraging slogans like, nearer, nearer, Dr. King is a nearer. Well, it sounded like nearer. Oh, my goodness. This is from Mima. Hi, Mike. I saw the video you had posted at your website about the guy who carried the public option now sign through the Tea Party crowd while being escorted by the police. It was laughable. The guy must either have some courage or he's missing something. I wouldn't have done that. I think we've seen enough from the so-called Tea Party by now. in the form of screaming, absurd signs, and pointless diatribes, that we have to assume that at least a significant percentage of them are a bit shy in the brains department. They never seem to realize that they're just useful puppets for corporate masters. Like I heard Randy say, it was the first time she had ever seen crowds demonstrating for the corporate world rather than against it. As I've watched the right-wing criminals and their mouth-breathing followers these last years, especially the Bush years, I found myself remembering a scene from the video series World at War, which came out quite a number of years ago. There's a scene in one of the films showing long columns of Nazi officers who were recently captured and were being marched off somewhere, presumably for questioning and processing. During this scene, the narrator, Laurence Olivier, says they had been bad masters and now they would be punished. End quote. Many times I've visualized the same kind of justice being meted out to the Republican villains of recent history, some to be executed for their crimes, some to serve long prison sentences, and some, regrettably, to be released and returned to society. Unfortunately, our society hasn't been able to manage even that kind of simple justice for the people. In other words, the idea that the worst leaders must be punished for horrendous crimes against their people, and without that, the people have little sense of justice at all. Yet today, we see such illustrious characters, as Dick Cheney and the Bush crime family doing quite well. Turd Blossom is still raising hell in his devil-like fashion behind the scenes. Most of the neocon devils are still thriving. There has been little, if any, of the kind of justice that the people so desperately need to see. And as you've often pointed out, our current administration has been quite disappointing in a number of regrettable ways, effectively alienating so much of the support that they were able to garner in the run-up to the 2008 election. All of this, of course, being noted by the Republican opposition, who intends to make hay on these failures, if they possibly can. Mima? Okay, Mima. What else we got here? All right, from our educational correspondent. This is not one of her essays, but she writes, Mike, one of your callers on Friday, Daryl, I think, actually it was an email of his that I read, posed the question of why Democrats and progressives continually press the idea of looking forward, not back, and advocate forgiving the unforgivable. His comments reminded me of a quote that a friend recently shared with me. And it's from Tim O'Brien, who's the author of the Vietnam story, The Things They Carried. Tim O'Brien writes, quote, I think there's a false notion that we all ought to recover from everything. We all ought to heal. And I don't believe in it. I believe the opposite. There are some things you shouldn't heal from, that are unhealable. And if they are healable, you oughtn't to do it anyway. There's something to be said for remembering and not healing. End quote. Amen to that, Kay writes, especially where it concerns the Bush crime family. Yeah, I certainly agree. Healing, huh? Yes, let's all heal. Oh, by the way, in the context of something else, I just have to drop this in before it gets away. Last month, Don Blankenship, in whose West Virginia mine 29 workers died this past spring, remember? Don Blankenship, Massey Energy, told an audience at the National Press Club, quote, corporate business is what built America, in my opinion, and we need to let it thrive by, in a sense, leaving it alone. End quote. And Michael Kazin, who wrote this, said such an obscenity and the worldview that lies behind it should be publicized as widely as possible. Yeah, no kidding. You know, I've said it so many times on this program, and it's not a revelation. I mean, if you are a thinking individual, even a little bit like me, you know this, that capitalism is the worst economic system available. It is absolutely the worst. A lot of people will immediately, the right-wingers who couldn't find their ass with both hands, will immediately say, well, capitalism built this country. No, it didn't. Slavery built the country. Genocide built the country. Forcing people to be wage slaves built the country. Exploitation of natural resources built the country. And built the country into what? The building the country part was a side effect. It was an unintended effect of the capitalists taking everything they could get their hands on. So here's this guy who runs Massey Energy, where all the miners died in his mine, and he stands there and urinates all over their bodies, all over their corpses, all over the gravesite. Because what he was saying is what we talked about on this program and what you already know. The American worker is a piece of waste to be used by capitalist America until he or she is no longer needed. And then, flick, gone. And replacing the American worker is a Mexican worker. And replacing, eventually, the Mexican worker is a Chinese worker. And replacing, eventually, the Chinese worker is a Vietnamese worker. And replacing, eventually, the Vietnamese worker is a Palestinian worker. Or, where do we go next? Moldova? Tajikistan? Kazakhstan? Three words, not two, three. God damn capitalism. Three words, not two. The cornpone Nazis. I have got to do this one, and I guess we'll do it after the break at the bottom of the hour. James Howard Kunstler, who, along with Mark Morford and a couple more, are some of the most, or two of the most acerbic writers in the country today, and I just have to share this with you. Also, I have a report here from Prairie 2. We'll do that next after we come back from this break, which we are about to take. Do you have Jump? You don't have it? You'll get it? Okay. Ever since she wrote that about the Van Halen song, I can't get out of my head, so...
Now you want the Van Halen Jump and not the Pointer Sisters or whoever.
No, I want...
Jump for your love.
No, not I want one. Van Halen. I want the rock version. We'll be right back. In the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. You know the first time I traveled out. In the rain and snow, in the rain and snow. I didn't have no pharaoh, not even no place to go. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. And my dear mother left me when I was quite young, when I was quite young. She said, Lord, have mercy on my wicked son. Ended too. Ah, 22 past the hour. Thanks, Gabby. Obama cracks the big egg. Can I get this in? Prairie 2 writes, a glimmer of progressive government has appeared in the eye of the Obama administration in the persons of Attorney General Eric Holder and Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, who opened a day-long workshop at Colorado State University for the few remaining independent cattle producers. These two cabinet secretaries were dispatched from Washington to express the government's intention of reviving the Packers and Stockyards Act. This is the law from the bygone age of Teddy Roosevelt's muckraking that could break the stranglehold of our food supply by transnational monopoly corporations. You see, since 1980, the number of hog farms has dropped from 660,000 to 71,000. And cattle farms have fallen from 1.6 million to 950,000. While hog farmers got 50% of the retail value of a hog in 1980, their share today is 24.5%, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Hog farmers that remain are no more than sharecroppers, with virtually all of the hogs owned by meat packers and not by the farmers who raise them on contract, that put all of the risk on the farmer and all of the profit in the pockets of corporations. U.S. meat packing giants like Cargill, Tyson Foods, and National Beef, and Brazil's JBS SA have been growing and consolidating control to a degree that didn't exist in 1921 when the Packers and Stockyards Act was passed. Cargill, for example, has used NAFTA to dump half-price corn into Mexico to devastate the Mexican farm economy, and simultaneously, they recruited dispossessed Mexicans to come work in the U.S. meatpacking plants, without proper documentation, of course. Hog production had recently been shifting to mega farms in Mexico, where health, safety, and environmental laws don't exist. But that pesky swine flu pandemic has slowed that movement. The Packers and Stockyards Act also gives the government broad authority over poultry and eggs. And we now see how well allowing giant unregulated egg producers works. No meaningful government intervention in any area of big agribusiness versus small farmers has occurred over the last 60 years. In fact, this has been IMF policy applied worldwide to drive small farmers off the land in the name of efficiency, efficient elimination of independent people, and efficient creation of corporate profits. In this efficiency movement, people that are not of the top 0.3% of income are expendable. This is not an easy row to hoe for the Obama administration, as Bush appointed appeals court judges routinely to dismiss suits brought by farmers alleging price fixing and predatory practices by meat packers. The corporatist Supreme Court simply refuses all appeals. Court watchers have said there is no right or left bias to Supreme Court rulings in general, but rather the deciding factor is which side the corporation on. The corporation always wins. The thrust of the new USDA rules are intended to create an environment where these farmer lawsuits will be more difficult to smash. Unfortunately, these measures will probably have little immediate impact on the farm crisis, but they do set a political agenda that puts Obama squarely in the progressive movement. The Department of Justice has even broken into the long boarded-up offices of its antitrust division and is studying the possibility of breaking up the mega corporations. But maybe it's just my Pollyanna nature that I see this as a real possibility. Prairie2.com. Thank you, Bruce. All right, when we come back, I've got to do this James Howard Kunstler piece. It's not that long. Won't take long. And then we may even get some phone calls. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. You all don't like to call this program anyway, I know. And your cell phones never work, and, you know. All right, stick around. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy.
Rock and roll band, they play all night long, dance all night long. But you just wanna sit and listen to wild one from the bar. I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker and fly into the sun.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Fly into the sun.
Twenty-five before the hour. James Kunstler. Here come the cornpone Nazis. Fox News entertainer, former drug addict, and professional weeper Glenn Beck took center stage at the Lincoln Memorial exactly 47 years to the day after Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech for a rally dedicated to restoring honor, which is Tea Party code for the otherwise unutterable idea that the N-word should get out of the White House. 87,000 disoriented citizens lined the D.C. Mall reflecting pool and adjoining lawns to witness Beck overstep his role as a television clown and don the mantle of an evangelist savior battling the dark forces working insidiously to put the America of Walmart, Walt Disney World, NASCAR, and Burger King into the collapsed Society Hall of Fame, where it's heading anyway, due to the bad choices these self-same citizens made during an extraordinary bonanza era of cheap oil that is now drawing to a close, whether anyone likes it or not. Naturally, Beck invoked prayer against this prospect, which is what people resort to when they don't understand what is happening to them. Beck himself just seems to be following a career arc more than really answering a call. The emptiness of his platitudes and the confusion of his ideas show that he is just flexing his demagogic muscles in a moment when weepy bluster passes for heroism. 10 years ago, he was a cringing drunk contemplating suicide. Then he went shopping in America's Mall of Utopias for something to believe in and found Mormonism, a religion dreamed up by an imaginative young man on the agricultural frontier of Western New York during an earlier age of ferment, which, guess what, coincided with a decade of economic turbulence. Of course, what has allowed Beck to occupy center stage is the failure of rational political figures to articulate the terms of the convulsion that American society faces, brought about not by communists and other John Birch hobgoblins, but by the forces of history. The failure at the political center is a conscious one of nerve and will, of elected officials in both major parties playing desperately for advantage in defiance of the truth. The truth being that the USA went broke trying to swindle itself into prosperity. Add to this the failure of the law to go after the swindlers, which has undermined the fundamental belief in the rule of law that enabled this society to function as well as it did previously. Barack Obama personifies this failure these days, a politician proclaiming change who not only managed to change nothing, but promoted a continuation of the national self-swindling with legislation so dazzlingly prolix and complicated that no one can claim to have read either the Health Care Reform Act or the Financial Regulations Bill, the two hallmarks of his tenure so far, neither of which will change anything about how we do these things. Why Mr. Obama has turned out to be such a weenie remains a mystery. Even the former communist at Russia Today laugh at the idea that he is a communist or a socialist, and so do I. He certainly appears to be hostage of the more maligned forces in society these days, the medical insurance racket, the too-big-to-fail banks, the multinational corporations. But I don't believe it's because he wants to suck up to them or join their country clubs when his current job ends. My own guess is that he's been informed that the system is so fragile that if he dares to disturb even one teensy-weensy part of it, for instance, by throwing some executives from Goldman Sachs, Merrill Lynch, and so forth into federal prison, that said system will fly to pieces in a fortnight. So Obama's main task for a year and a half has been to desperately apply baling wire and duct tape to the banking system while telling fibs to the public about a wish for recovery to a prior state. Unfortunately, that prior state is the ecstasy of a self-swindle in the moments before it unravels. The sublime feeling of having gotten something wonderful for nothing. We're beyond that now, and nothing on the age-old shelf of Nostrum spells, prayers, and miracle cures will avail to bring that moment back, though the public does not know this. And this is what allows a faker like Glenn Beck to shine. The masses still truly believe that prayer will save them from bankruptcy, foreclosure, penury, the loss of status, and the cut off of precious air conditioning. So Glenn steps onto a national monument like an Aztec priest ascending the pyramid of Huitzilopochtli to soothe the angry god with worshipful incantations and, incidentally, maybe a few dozen sacrificial hearts cut out. Just as the teabagger right wing glorifies the sacrifices of U.S. soldiers blown up by roadside bombs for the sake of American military adventuring and lost causes, like the war to turn Afghanistan into a functioning Western-style democracy. Glenn Beck's sidekick nowadays, Sarah Palin, is exactly the kind of corn-pone Hitler that America deserves. A badly educated, childlike, warmongering opportunist easily manipulated by backstage extremist billionaires who think they don't have enough money yet. Sarah Palin is going to run for president in 2012. In the process, she'll turn the sad remains of the Republican Party into a suicide cult. But she might just get elected. And you can kiss the 230-year-long experiment in representative government goodbye for good. In the meantime, the financial markets are getting ready to puke. The housing market has yet a million frauds left to unwind. The commercial real estate and retail sectors are crashing. The projects in Afghanistan and Iraq, too, are set to suck a few billion a day out of the system indefinitely. And the season leading into the holidays is taking shape as a major amplification of all the converging cluster blanks that makes these such interesting times. The teabagger faction will only get more desperately crazy as a result. The bigger mystery in all this, if I may perhaps engage in some nostalgia of my own, is what happened to reasonable, rational, educated people of purpose in this country, to drive them into such a burrow of cowardice that they can't speak the truth or act decisively or even defend themselves against such a host of vicious morons in a time of troubles. James Kunstler. Yeah, that's the question that so many of us keep asking over and over and over and over again. We're not all teabaggers. As a matter of fact, a very small percentage of us are. They're all white people. They're all racist. None of this started until we had a man, a real African-American man, in the Oval Office. This is all about racism. You know, this Restore America crap. Come on. Only the twisted and the easily manipulable are still left with the delusion this isn't pure, unadulterated freak out caused by Barack Obama's part race. You know, he's part African, part American. He's part white, part black, white. But see, here in America, we have the one-drop rule. So, you know, Barack Obama's a black man. Ooh, that's what this is all about. That's what Beck, I mean, this crazy bastard, worked his string as far out as he could take it. And all of a sudden, at the end of the rope, or string, dangling there, is Glenn Beck, the preacher. Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it would be Glenn Beck, the preacher? I mean, I'm kind of relieved. I really am, because I do want to see how Michael Steele and the dregs of the Republican Party react now. They've got two holy rollers out there now. Two people, Palin and Beck, who believe in haints, who believe in spooks, who believe in casting out demons, who believe in exorcisms and green vomit coming out of possessed souls. There they are. Is this funny? To me, it is. It is very funny to me. It may be something a lot worse than funny. Time will tell. But I guess all that can be done by those of us who are still rational is either do what Kunstler said and stop listening to this garbage and start acting like adults again, Or just kind of slide into Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin's insanity. Incoherent insanity. You know, I can appreciate madness if it's coherent. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there is a kind of insanity like Edgar Allan Poe. Or, I don't know, pick somebody. Usually a figure in Van Gogh. Usually a figure in art or Mick Jagger. I can appreciate insanity that is orderly and coherent. But this sloppy, stupid-ass kind of insanity of Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, it's just getting so damn tiresome. Welcome back. 10 before the hour, we're going to move on at the top of the next hour. If you want to see how disgusting, or you want to hear how disgusting BP really is, OMFG, you've got to hear this bit. Here it is right here. That we're going to be talking about next hour. BP, I don't know how to put it. Well, we'll do it coming up. All right, what else do we have here? U.S. wasted billions in rebuilding Iraq. We'll get to that. Probably not tonight. Krugman's column. Today, was it today? It's witch hunt season. We'll get to that. The fact that the Christian right needs enemies. What else we got here? I don't know. I hope that this program doesn't depress you so much in the topics that we select and talk about that. You know, you have to turn it off. There certainly is no humor in being unemployed or without health insurance or watching the stress and strain on your kids or your nieces and nephews or your partner. These are really, really, really bad times. For 98% of us, 99% of us. The other 1% doesn't even realize what's going on. They couldn't care less, right? I don't know how we get through this. I really don't. If I had to find a job tomorrow, I couldn't. I know that. Kathy probably could, but it would be something at a very low wage. And like most people who listen to this program, I assume, you know, we've got the same kind of bills, a mortgage payment, utilities, food, health insurance, clothes for Molly, occasional trip up the road, find a cabin someplace and take a weekend off, you know, we can still do that. As far as big vacation trips or things that we'd like to do, we just can't. We, you know, the money's not there. Money's not there for millions and millions and millions of people. I don't know. I really don't know how to deal with this. I don't. I keep hoping that one of these days I'm going to get a report from Prairie 2 where he's going to have all sorts of wonderful breaking economic news that I happen to miss that day. And it'll say something in effect, hey, Mike, the Depression's over. Guess what? Yada, 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 yada. And he'll list the hundreds, if not thousands, of factories that are returning to the United States. And the capitalists will all stand up like they did in communist China during the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution. The capitalists will all stand up and they'll wear those big pointy dunce hats and say, we're sorry, we are sorry, we are sorry, we destroyed this great country, we are sorry. Yeah, but then I realize that's not going to happen. So, I don't know. Occasionally, I will get emails from right-wingers that make it through the filter. And they'll say, if we are such a smart ass, what's your solution? I don't have any solution. I'm not going to tell people to go pray. I don't, you know, I'm not going to say, get down on your knees and ask God. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell myself. I don't know what to tell my adult kids that struggle with their financial obligations. We have, we're at the kind of a nexus of some really bad stuff that has been building up in this country for a long time. I'm talking about greed. Remember back in the 80s, what was the movie, Wall Street, Greed is Good? Remember that? A nexus of greed and national hubris and invasion of other people's countries and torture and real estate bubbles caused by fanatic money manipulators on Wall Street. And they almost got the American public convinced it was a bunch of poor people, right? That's the insanity of this. Oh, well, it was those people that applied for loans who couldn't pay for them. They're the ones who brought down the entire global economic system. You know, and somebody that's making 20 grand a year says, really? Damn, I had that much power? Woo, I had no idea. I don't have any answers. I've got question after question after question after question. I don't know what's going to happen. It looks pretty bleak right now, doesn't it? Well, anyway, I am hoping that the past, excuse me, 2 hours will be the last time I talk about Glenn Beck and his insanity until the day that he does kill himself or goes off his 12-step program, gets drunk on his ass, and crashes into a concrete abutment someplace. But I just don't think we're going to try this again, this Beck craziness. All right, we have another hour to go before we sleep. Excuse me. Must be the throat cancer. We have another hour to go before we sleep, so stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. All right. As promised, there's more in the news than the rise of America's newest fundamentalist preacher. Oh, my. Okay. Calm down. Calm down. For those of you who are poised to send in an email, no video this last hour. We've just decided not to do it, okay? Okay. Don't send Kathy an email. Mike forgot to turn the video can. No, no, just no more video this for this program. Let me collect my wits here. Well, I'll tell you what, British Petroleum is certainly the gift that just can't stop giving. There will be an attempt soon. It doesn't say when here. An attempt to detach that temporary cap that stopped oil from gushing into the Gulf, and to remove the that enormous device that failed to prevent the leak. All of this while trying to avoid more damage to the environment. According to somebody, Associated Press, retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, the guy who is the Obama administration's point man on all this, has told reporters that engineers will remove the cap. I guess they started earlier today, so they can raise the failed blowout preventer. The blowout preventer, if we talk about an inoperative term, the blowout preventer is considered a key piece of evidence in determining what caused the explosion that killed all those people, 11 workers, and unleashed that volcano of oil. The Department of Justice and other federal investigators are overseeing the work to remove the blowout preventer, Admiral Allen said. The 50-foot, 600,000-pound device will be taken out of the water with the well pipe still inside to ensure the pipe doesn't break apart any more than it already has. Right, you know, as I read this, I'm thinking to myself, okay, they're going to, I guess they have to do this to permanently seal the well if that's BP's plan. But once again, the concerns of people who are not connected with BP are kind of secondary, right? BP is one of the biggest killers of innocent people on Earth. British Petroleum, if it were a person, I mean literally a person, it in Texas, for all the damage and murder it has committed there, it would have been executed. Texas would have sent BP to the death house several times over. You know, they would have killed BP, reanimated BP, killed BP, reanimated BP, killed BP. Sort of like what's going on with Dick Cheney. But that doesn't happen because BP has the same rights as a human being, but not the same responsibilities. And again, if BP were a person, Texas would have murdered it a long time ago. Or some irate citizen who watched their child die of lung disease because of a BP toxic release would have done the dirty deed. But because BP is a capitalist corporation, it is immune from the law, except little stupid slaps on the wrist, little, you know, here's a $600,000 fine, here's a $10 million fine, here's a $50,000 fine. That doesn't mean anything to a company like BP. Are you kidding me? That would be like you're receiving a $500 fine and a suspended six-month sentence for wiping out an elementary school. It's about the same. BP can do anything it wants to do. Most huge capitalist organizations in this country, or globally, not just in this country, can do any damn thing it wants to do. Anything. Doesn't matter. Because it is not a person, and, or is it? No, oh well, it gets confusing. Anyway, while we were all focusing on the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, several weeks ago, a BP refinery in Texas City, Texas. Yeah, Texas City. That's where all the workers were killed when a BP refinery exploded. Remember that? A couple of years ago? Remember all those people that were murdered by BP? That was in 2005. 15 people died. 170 were injured. BP was fined $87 million. For that one, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. $87 million, chump change. That's in the cash drawer, the petty cash drawer. Here, pay those sons of bitches. Let's get out of town. Come on. Anyway, while we were all focused on the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, the refinery in Texas City released huge amounts of toxic chemicals into the air that went unnoticed by people who live in Texas City, Texas, until residents saw their children get sick and come down with respiratory problems. Now, the right-wingers in the audience are going to start clawing at the air and you know, coughing up their lungs and saying, "You can't prove that, Mike!" For 40 days after a piece of equipment critical to the BP refinery's operation broke down, a total of 538,000 pounds of toxic chemicals, including benzene, which causes, you know, cancer, poured out of the refinery. James McKinley, writing at the New York Times, revealed this for anyone who wants to take a look. And rather than taking what would have been a costly step to BP of shutting down the refinery, just shut it down, make the repairs. No, hell no. What? Shut it down. The engineers at the factory diverted gases to a smokestack and shot this stuff up the smokestack and then tried to burn the chemicals off when they reached the top of the smokestack. But, oh, darn it, hundreds of thousands of pounds still escaped into the air, according to Texas environmental officials. Now, you know, and I know, that the Texas Department of Environment, or whatever they call it, is no more concerned with the environment than you're concerned with a ingrown hair someplace on the top of your head. It's just not an issue. Texas Environmental Division, when the state is run on the belief that anything that's poisonous that can get into the water, air, or earth has a right to get into the water, air, or earth, right? So when you see a report from the Texas Environmental Division officials that says hundreds of thousands of pounds of poison escaped into the air, the first thing you can conclude is that it was much worse than the environmental officials are reporting. However, in keeping with the attitude of the Texas Environmental Division, they did not, nor did BP, inform people living in the area about what was going on until 2 weeks after this poison stopped spewing into the air. So in other words, they released the hundreds of thousands of pounds of poison for the children of the parents living in Texas City, Texas. Released it all. Nobody said a word. 2 weeks later, then officials said, "Oh, y'all, listen. A couple weeks back, guess what?" We'll have more in a second.
liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. So anyway, out in Texas City, Texas, at the big BP monolith, where people die as a matter of fact, working for and living near this huge refinery. A couple of years ago, it was 15 people blown into gaseous vapors, I guess. And now it turns out that while everybody else is watching the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, BP released tons of toxic chemicals, including benzene, into the atmosphere in Texas City. The Texas Department of Environment notified everybody 2 weeks after this release occurred. Hundreds of thousands of pounds escaped into the air. All BP had to do is shut the damn company down, correct the problem, and nobody would have gotten sick. And the people who are now going to die prematurely would not have died prematurely. But that's not what BP is in business for. BP is a capitalist organization that is in business for one thing and one thing only, and that's to make a profit. The death of people, the dismemberment of people, the burning alive of people, the toxic dispersal of poison that causes children to die prematurely, all of that is nothing more than collateral incidents. They don't even call it damage. Oh, really? Did we kill 15 more? Oh, well, damn. Somebody call the comptroller. Let's get the checkbook out. How much are you going to cost us this time? This time, angry residents in Texas City, Texas have signed up in droves to join a class action lawsuit against BP. And surprise, surprise, the state attorney general, Greg Abbott, also has sued the company. Now, let me show you the difference here. I hope this makes an impression on you. The angry residents of Texas City have signed up to join a $10 billion class action lawsuit. $10 billion. The Texas attorney general has sued the company, and he's looking for fines of $600,000. You son of a bitch. $600,000. You know, that is literally the Texas Attorney General saying to BP, all right, boys, all right, damn. I don't know what's wrong with you boys. Can't you keep this stuff hidden? Lord, open up your petty cash box. Give me some lunch money. $600,000 will do it. But good Lord, boys, you got to hide this stuff better. Now, come on. BP says that three air monitors along the fence around the plant, they maintain three air monitors and along the fence that surrounds the plant, and they have two more air monitors, quote, in the surrounding community, end quote. And according to BP, these monitors did not show a rise in pollution during April and May. The company said, companies can't talk. Michael Marr, a spokesman for the company, said BP does not believe there is any basis to pay claims in connection with this event. BP does not believe. BP thinks. BP has a soul. BP believes in Jesus Christ, probably. No, BP is not real, Mr. Michael Marr, spokesman for the company. So when you say, quote, BP does not believe there is any basis to pay claims in connection with this event, end quote, what in the hell do you mean, Michael? What do you mean? Do you mean the hundreds of thousands of old British retirees who own stock in your filthy company? Do they believe that no claims should be paid in this particular incident or event, as you call it, Michael. You pig. Scores of Texas City residents said they experienced respiratory problems this spring, and environmentalists said the release of toxic gas is ranked as one of the largest in the state's history. However, BP does not believe there's any basis to pay the claims. Here we go. Environmentalists, not the state Environmental Protection Division. Oh, no. Hell no. But environmentalists, you know, communists. Probably some of them are dark-skinned, too. What do you want to bet, huh? The environmentalists, the communists, the socialists who are trying desperately to destroy the state of Texas, said the release of toxic gases ranked as one of the largest in Texas history. But, all right, now somebody here has their facts, Bass Ackwards, right? Texas says we want a $600,000 fine. The people say we need a $10 billion class action lawsuit. The State Environmental Protection Division is kind of flummoxed. I don't know what to do. And BP says nothing happened.
This is an important...
Okay. All right, where were we? Oh, yeah, BP out in Texas City, Texas, unleashes vaporous hell against the residents of that city while everybody was watching BP unleash liquid hell into the Gulf of Mexico. These people, this company needs to be eliminated. It needs to be destroyed. It needs to be run off planet Earth. It needs to be gotten rid of. I mean, the murder and mayhem caused by BP is just endless. So we wind up here. 538,000 pounds of toxic chemicals, including the carcinogen benzene, released out of the BP refinery in Texas City, Texas. Huge amount of toxic chemicals went into the air. And then the kids started getting sick. Neil Carman of the Lone Star Sierra Club said the release was probably even larger than BP has acknowledged. Oh, no. Really? Because the company estimated that more than 98% of the pollution was burned off by a flare. Yeah, just like 90% of all the spilled oil in the Gulf of Mexico, Gulfo de Mexico, is gone. It's just gone. And regarding the 538,000 pounds of toxic chemicals, including the carcinogen benzene that was released into the air. Well, it didn't happen. It didn't happen. The company estimated 98% of the pollution was burned off. The spokesman for the Sierra Club said there are far too few air monitors to accurately assess what had happened. But wait, far too few? BP maintains three air monitors along the fence around the plant and two in the surrounding community. That's five, Mr. Carmen. That's not enough. Now we get to the part where the what was referred to as the anecdotal reports. Dionne Ramirez, who's 29 and lives about a mile from the refinery, said she had little doubt that elevated pollution harmed her family. Not only does she and her husband have coughs that just don't seem to want to go away, But all three of their young sons have suffered from severe chest congestion, sore throats, endless coughing since April. Her four-year-old had to be hospitalized for two nights because he could not stop coughing. April. That's when the toxic release. Remember Bhopal, India? Just a coincidence that this poor lady's kid started coughing right at the time that BP released thousands, hundreds of thousands of pounds of poison into the air. A sheer coincidence! When the news of the pollution was made public on June 4th, Ms. Ramirez was irate. She said, I didn't know why they were getting sick or what was going on. They're healthy little kids. Well, Ms. Ramirez, healthy little kids are, when they get sick and die, that's just the price of, you know, living in a capitalist society. Yeah, I doubt if you have health insurance, do you, Ms. Ramirez? Do you? Do you have health insurance? Oh, good. What do you have, the HMO? But that's nice. Huh? But you see, Ms. Ramirez, you and your spouse and your children mean nothing to BP, nothing less than zero. I mean, you don't exist. Because BP burned off 98% of the poison it released into the air. It swears, well, doesn't swear because that would be a legal statement. No. Insists is the word. They insist. And besides, BP has two monitors in Texas City, Texas, which has a population of around 50,000 people. But two monitors should be enough to watch out for things, Mrs. Ramirez. Christina Kelly, who lives with her husband and four children on the same street, said, we all became sick, throwing up, diarrhea, couldn't keep anything down. We just thought it was something that was going around. But then everybody around here got it. Well, Mrs. Kelly, it is something that's going around. It is the death and destruction that is going around courtesy of British Petroleum. A corporation that says things and thinks things and decides things. No human beings do this, Mrs. Kelly. The corporation does. So all those people that live in the shadow of these jumbled smokestacks and pipelines and cylindrical tanks and giant globes of the refinery, all of these people, had someone fall ill during May, according to the residents there. Oh, well, now that's just a statistical anomaly. Hell, you can take, pick someplace. Columbus, Ohio. I'll bet you every family in Columbus has somebody fall ill during flu season. BP didn't cause that. Mrs. Kelly said the release of the chemicals was less troubling to her than the company's silence. She said, quote, I'm worried that one day I'll take my kids to the doctor and something that could have been prevented wasn't prevented because we didn't know to the last moment, end quote. Well, Ms. Kelly, with all due respect, because I'm a parent just like you are, it's far worse than that. It's far worse than that. BP doesn't care if your children live or die. Your children don't exist, Mrs. Kelly. In fact, you don't exist. This huge, monolithic capitalist organization called BP doesn't care. It thinks, it has emotions, it makes decisions, it has beliefs and non-beliefs, but it doesn't care, Mrs. Kelly. You're a pain in its huge daisy green ass. Are you aware of that? You've seen that logo, Mrs. Kelly? You bug them. Shut up. Go die. Take your children with you. Now, officials in Texas City said they were not informed of the scale of the release until it was over. BP, talking again, said it, we met the requirements of state law by informing state officials of the release in writing, then filing a final report in June after the equipment was fixed. I guess that's what a corporation sounds like. I have no idea. The final report from BP said the release of chemicals had gone on for 959 hours. That's the company report. The release of the poison, 959 hours, it drifted into Texas City. Among other pollutants, the plant had released 17,000 pounds of benzene, 37,000 pounds of nitrogen oxides, which can cause respiratory problems, and 186,000 pounds of carbon monoxide, which can kill you. Another 262,000 pounds of various volatile organic compounds. Various. Let's use that word. Various. You know, a bunch. Now, violations of this font of death and destruction are nothing new. According to officials, federal and state, in 2005, that's when the explosion at the refinery killed 15 people, injured 170. This month, August, BP agreed to pay $50 million for violations caught by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Now, when the Republicans take over the House again, and the Senate, and the presidency, as they surely will, because the Republicans believe in God, and as you heard Glenn Beck yesterday, it's time to take our country back. It is time to find Jesus again. So when the Republicans take over, the what few rules and regs are still in place end permanently. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a moment. As I see the country of the United States, the former country of the United States, turning kind of a yellowish brown from all the death and destruction hanging in the air, people dropping like flies, the flies dropping like flies, because everything is poisoned. Texas City, by the way, is a town of about 50,000. It's modest little frame houses, fast food restaurants, dollar stores. It's on the coastal plains. Isn't that a quaint term? Coastal plains. What does that make you think of? Oh, Mike, waving fields of sea oats and an occasional scrub palm and scrub pine and estuaries and little fish and shrimps running around. No, wrong image. The coastal plains, right across a channel from Galveston, Texas. All of that section of South Texas is a toxic soup of death, illness, deformed children, and destruction. We'll be right back. For the hour. You know, that's what the Becca Palooza was all about yesterday in D.C. It was to divert people's attention totally and completely. Poor white people, like we mentioned earlier, who are looking for their savior to lead them back to their promised land. But anyway, while all this nonsense goes on, predators, huge monsters, like British Petroleum, stalk the globe's countryside, seaside, the depths of the ocean, destroying everything and anything it touches. Now, I know a lot of people can make the argument, well, Mike, that's only because people demand fossil fuels. Why don't we have a choice here? You say, we've asked our leaders over and over again, haven't we, to provide funding for green energy sources, renewable energy sources. We've talked a million times about the power of solar energy. If we just harnessed one day's solar energy across the globe, we could run everything that we have here for, what, 1,000 years or something like that. But no, we have to spend money on the ultra-wealthy. We must. And our wars. We must. So everything else can go to hell. And that's why Beck and the rest of these slime are paid the enormous chunks of money that they're paid to keep us refocused. Right? Anyway, back in Texas City, Texas, a town of about 50,000 people, little frame houses, fast food restaurants, dollar stores on the coastal plains across the channel from Galveston. I like this. The refineries, I don't mean I like it in a condescending way. I mean, I like the descriptiveness of this next sentence. The refineries dwarf the clapboard abodes of workers here, thrusting up into tropical skies in utilitarian ugliness and painting the azure sky with smoke. Now, that was written by a poet. Who in the hell wrote that? What's the guy's name? James McKinley Jr., writing in today's New York Times. James McKinley Jr., that is a powerful sentence. The refineries dwarf the clapboard abodes of workers here, thrusting up into tropical skies in utilitarian ugliness and painting the azure sky with smoke. Of course, those smokestacks mean jobs. And by the way, this is what happens. A lot of the people in Texas City, Texas, are convinced that those who have signed on to the class action lawsuit against BP, that their motives are suspect. Pete Fernandez, a longtime resident, called the lawsuits frivolous, completely, totally frivolous. He said, quote, "This is just money-hungry money grubbers is all it is." Money-hungry money grubbers, right. People who are suing this company for poisoning the air, the ground, the water, their dreams, their futures, their children, their spouses. And then issuing statements after the fact saying, oh, by the way, we had a little event. Nothing to worry about because it all got burned off in our super-duper scrubber smokestacks, powerful Agent X smokestacks that allow nothing to get into the environment, so don't worry about it. And poor old Pete Fernandez sits back on his bottom and says, yep, these are just money-hungry money grubbers. That's all that is. Hell, the company told us what they didn't do. They didn't hurt anybody. Some longtime refinery workers are among those signing on. Here's another anecdotal report. Robert Sukianik, who is 45, has worked as refinery operator for 20 years. In early May, he started to cough and felt weak. He finally saw a doctor in mid-July who became alarmed at his white blood cell count. A CAT scan a week later revealed abnormal spots on his kidneys, and he was referred to an oncologist for more tests. Leukemia is a possibility, he's told. Of course, it's utterly, absolutely, totally, completely, as Glenn Beck or any Bible-believing Christian will tell you, it is impossible to know for certain. Mr. Sukianik's sudden decline in health is connected to the emission of VP. It could be the hand of God. But Mr. Sukianik says that the refinery has had so many troubles over the years, he is filled with suspicion that it might be at the root of his health problems. Amen. He said, quote, every day they have some problem over there. I don't think BP itself really cares about the community. They are not trying for safety. All they care about is the big bucks, end quote. Mr. Sukienik, you're absolutely right. BP, this thinking entity that can issue statements, can make claims, can hire lawyers to defend it in court, this huge, monstrous thing that is able to stick its tentacles into your liver, into your children's lungs. You are absolutely right. They're not trying for safety. They're interested in profit. They're fully aware that you, sir, are an expendable piece of collateral damage. That's all. That's all you are now. That's all you have ever been. That's all you will ever be. Well, on that cheerful note, we will get out of your ears. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
If you are in